This week's episode is brought to you by the Retail Innovation Conference and Expo.
What's really happening now is a kind of, I think the best kind of tech that I'm seeing is where it's just adding to these kind of slow, creative experiences people are having in stores. And almost like being fast and efficient and convenient when customers went at the moment that they want that speed and efficiency.
You're listening to Retail Remix, your inside access to candid conversations with the people shaping retail's future. Here's your host, Alicia Esposito.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of our NRF series. I'm Alicia Esposito. You know me by now. And I am so excited to have on the pod for the first time my good friend, Jack Stratton of Insider Trends. Jack, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Alicia.
We're going to get into some of the things that we're working on together. But first, why don't you share a little bit of context? Why don't you tell the folks a little bit about Insider Trends and the research and analysis that you do for the industry, because it's fascinating stuff.
Thanks so much, Alicia. Yeah, so I run Insider Trends, a retail consultancy based in London. And yeah, broadly, we're a retail consultancy, but to be honest, our big focus is trying to spot the kind of macro trends in relation to physical stores. And we do that in large part by just going out and looking at newest stores all around the world. We run a lot of store tours. And, you know, we kind of mix, I guess, a lot of desk research with just getting to the front line of retail, seeing what's happening in these new spaces and trying to get to grips with what's really meaningful and what might actually affect the future.
Yeah, which I think is important, right? Because it's one thing to just like do the research, do the surveys, but to actually experience it and to see what works and what doesn't at the execution level. I mean, that's really impactful stuff. And obviously we're at NRF. You just spent the last how many days doing store tours?
Like 3-4 days of solid tours. Yeah, I'm tired legs, quite cold.
Yep. Yeah, especially around NRF and it's wintertime, New York City, a lot to see. So to that end, what have been some of the most exciting trends that you've seen bubble up at some of your stops?
So there's been a few things. Firstly, what I've loved is I think in some parts of New York, I've seen something I've seen in a couple of European cities as well, which is kind of high street downtown kind of spaces being used differently, but actually how they add to a real vibrancy of the mix. And obviously we're familiar with there being, say, especially in New York, like art galleries and kind of cultural destinations mixed within retail. There's one in Soho called the Raleigh Museum. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Oh yeah, we did a story on that. Yeah.
I just loved it. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. And I think mainly because I know it's on Broadway there, and you get things like on Broadway, and so, you know, you've got Museum of Ice Cream, a load of other stuff that are essentially tourist destinations. But I love the Raleigh Museum because I could just see, for me, I was like, God, this really fits in a retail destination, actually. And it sat right between quite high-end stores, made perfect sense. So for anyone that doesn't know what it is, Raleigh is this platform that kind of crowdsources collectibles. You can buy shares in rare items. So they had Michael Jordan's first basketball jersey in there.
Wow.
Someone had bought it and they were holding it for just a couple of days. So, you know, there were queues of people to come and see this thing. But of course, that was then bringing people to Broadway and looking in other shops. And it just reminded me that the best retail locations, actually, they can really benefit from that mix of use. So it's not just stores, you know, not just retail stores and food, actually culturally different things. Shopify is still there in Soho as well. And I like that. I like the fact that this tech business is also saying, do you know what? Actually, there could be like small business customers here. This is a perfectly relevant location for us to use a physical space and invite people in. So I'm still seeing signs of that, which I really liked. The other big one, though, for sure, is an extension of something really I've been saying for years, but that's brands with a very clear sense of using physical spaces for marketing and advertising. That's always been there, but what is really happening in New York in a big way now is there's just so many brand spaces. I saw loads in Soho where it's so obvious that they really aren't measuring sales per square foot. They are,
are
totally focused on marketing. And the cool thing is what you're starting to see in those spaces is, much like Gentle Monster were doing years ago, that removal of not just removal of stock, but that removal of the barriers in terms of the store design and going, if this really is in the marketing budget, we can really tell our store designers to go crazy and do something really engaging. And it made me realize walking around, so that's starting to happen in quite a big way. So some of the kind of newish D2C stuff, there was a store called Goha World. I don't know much about Goha World. They're kind of, it's like this quite niche online tableware kitchen accessories brand. They had a pop-up that was just nuts. And I went in there and they were like, that's the point. We don't expect you to buy anything here. I just want you to remember who we are because the aesthetic is so strange. And a lot of people going in that I took into the store said, I don't even really get it. This is quite a confusing environment. And they were saying, that's the point. It's like an advert. It's like something you would see on the subway. We just want it to be vaguely memorable. And I really like that. I like that delineation and that reminder that actually if you from the ground up go, look, this store or those stores are for marketing in your wider kind of omni-channel KPIs, it's quite a powerful way of being really creative, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are a couple of the big things, a bunch of other stuff, but yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I think that's a really notable call out because I mean, sometimes we're guilty of this. When we talk about the in-store experience, there tends to always be the fallback directly to the role of technology. But I think it speaks to the bigger reality that stores require quite a bit of creativity and artistic license, and that there are still designers at the helm of these spaces. And sure, like marketing and IT, like they're playing a role in the decision-making process. But at the core, this is a visual storytelling vehicle. And like now more than ever, it seems like just based on the examples that you shared, it's almost an opportunity to really differentiate.
Absolutely.
Because we kind of fall into that pattern of like just focusing on like the structure of the space and the aisles and the product layouts. But like core, like true brand storytelling, like that's the opportunity to shine.
Absolutely. And you know, there's so much kind of, well, we know there's, with so many brands, it goes without saying, there's so much pure kind of selling and business growth going online. But then also, and you've written some great stuff about this that I've read before, about how all kinds of kind of virtual shopping environments, virtual retail environments are growing. So these factors just make me think, in many cases, you know, there simply is no choice but for stores to be more inventive and creative. And yet so many that I see, and I mean this even in flagship locations all around the world, the hype is there, you know, their PR teams tell me, come and look at this new store, and I come and have a look. And they so often fall somewhere short of genuinely creative and inspiring. But you can tell it's because the designers, the artists, just weren't given that full freedom because there was just maybe it's that little percentage somewhere along the line, you know, the CFO gets involved and they're like, look, there still has to be some sales per square foot here. There still needs to be that kind of measure. And equally, tech hasn't yet got an answer for measuring experience in a store in a really meaningful way. So I think the businesses get trapped and they go, well, we can't quite unleash it here because we need to have some product, needs to be some selling. But also they can't confidently measure experience. So they get nervous about that because they think, well, how can we do this? Whereas, and the example's still relevant, you know, 5-6 years after I heard it, Gentle Monster said years ago, when they started opening stores, these will go, some of these stores anyway, go in the marketing budget. And that means that we can create different KPIs, but even if the KPIs aren't totally accurate, we can think of it like a great piece of creative advertising that, say, was in print or elsewhere. And we can't totally measure that accurately. We just have to have faith that if it's brilliant, we're going to boost awareness somehow, having some faith that the marketing kind of does the work. So I think you're right, especially with kind of technology, that it just means the creatives in these businesses need to be freed up.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, I joined you on your store tour last year during NRF, and I still remember that Gentle Monster store, like, because I never heard of them before that moment. And I talk about it when people say, like, which store should I go to? Like, I'm going to New York, what should I check out? That is usually, if not the first, but one of the first brands that I mentioned. And I just had that one experience with them.
Yeah, and I just love that when it comes down to it, for all the brilliance of it, actually, there's really smart business model thinking underneath it, going, do you know what? They knew for it to be that memorable, they had to make sure that they weren't held back by KPIs and by constraints. So yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And it's interesting being in New York City because I feel like this is the city, if not one of the key cities / markets where brands and retailers kind of come here to push those boundaries, to test new concepts and kind of see what the response is, because it is that mixture of local and tourism. It's a nice diverse, you know, cross-section from an audience standpoint. Based on what you've seen, not just, you know, during this weekend here, but even past visits, are there any trends that you expect to emerge or accelerate over the next year that maybe have started here and like have started to like bubble up as like a testing ground in some ways?
I think at quite a high level, what New York, and I've really seen it on this trip, but it's been happening for a while now, you can feel that it's like the place that those breakthrough kind of D2C brands make their mark more than any other cities. And because of that, it's such a good place to go and see those brands, but also see almost be able to see whether those brands are going to be around for a while. Like, is there anything beyond that initial hype? Is there some stickiness there? Every trip I always, so on this one, you know, I saw a brand, they have a space up on Green Street in Soho called Sporty and Rich. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think for a lot of us, you might just think it's just another cool D2C brand that charges, you know, this sort of premium, fairly expensive. And what was interesting about seeing them is they're now one of so many that I saw. Cider had a, Cider was there as well, which is quite, had some really cool aesthetics, and I quite like what they were doing. But Sporty and Rich in particular, they were part of, I think, just in itself, like a trend of D2C brands having real kind of confidence to go, New York is the place where we're going to kind of make our mark, or at least it just seems to be that first place more than any other. Mm-hmm. And then even speaking to, I spoke to Sporting Rich a lot, I spoke to some people at Cider, and they were talking about the fact that it is now kind of New York first, and then they're like, if it's gone well enough, then they're like, then it's kind of London. Then perhaps second cities in the US, you know, it's Chicago, it's maybe doing something out in LA. But I think New York is, it's always been seen, like, especially Soho, you know, this is where big flagship brands do crazy stuff. Actually, now more than anything else, I'm seeing maybe, of course, big flagship brands are doing interesting things. But for me, the real notable thing in the last few years has been these new brands are doing really crazy stuff and really driving things in New York, aesthetically and in terms of design. Because I go back to Sporty and Rich, and it's really worth a look. I mean, such striking visuals and really funny as well. It's rare that brands are kind of, I think, very good at just being able to laugh at themselves. And there were loads of, like, you walk into Sporting Rich and there's a Jane Fonda fitness video.
Oh, I love that.
It's really funny.
And
and I had like a Princess Di book just randomly in the middle of the store and kind of completely out of context with everything else. And it was good because I thought, you know what? Big brands don't do stuff like that.
Right.
They just wouldn't. And it was nice to be reminded, you know, they're at that early enough stage where they can kind of have fun, laugh at themselves. And yeah, there was quite a few, and this has been the same on recent trips, lots of D2Cs really playing around here, which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you saw the new Glossier store,
yes,
right? Which I don't know, like, if they're technically like a upstart, you know, type D2C brand anymore because they're going like wholesale, but that's a whole different conversation because they are like at a certain level of growth, but they still are doing some really creative things. They're really leaning into that because that's what they're known for.
I'm so impressed with that. I think both the Brooklyn store and the Soho store are great. And you know what? I went there maybe 2-3 times this week on different tours. The busiest store anywhere, time,
okay,
just
good.
Packed. And still that same thing where it's like, it's not just busy, it's busy with a very, very specific demographic. It's busy with 13 to 19-year-old girls just relentlessly. And it's fascinating because this is a whole other conversation, but it's like I was looking at it thinking, you know, they still, it feels like quite deliberately alienate this whole other potential demographic. And people still think, oh, maybe they haven't got that long-term stickiness. But it doesn't seem to matter because they still hoover up their kind of core demographics so brilliantly. But yeah, anyway, the Glossier are great and still, do you know what, still so playful in that space. So many interesting things going on in it. Yeah, I think they're great. And they're, I think they're a good example, actually, of a D2C that's showing that they have legs. They've got some longevity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you ready to explore the evolved customer journey where content, community, and commerce converge? At the Retail Innovation Conference and Expo, you'll learn how brands and retailers are embracing new consumer insights, new technologies, and new destinations to create relevant and resonant experiences. Taking place on June 4th through the 6th at McCormick Place in Chicago, the Retail Innovation Conference and Expo will bring some of the brightest minds in the industry together for unique networking and learning opportunities, including keynote speaker, marketing expert, and author of For the Culture, Marcus Collins. Check out the show notes to register today.
And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the role of technology in the in-store experience at all.
Yeah.
Was there anything notable you saw this time around? Or, I mean, there's some like core stores, I think, that people tend to reference and use as examples, you know, as we think about that integration between digital and physical. So are there any that come to mind for you?
Yeah, so I think, you know, having kind of done a lot of kind of taking clients to interesting stores for so long, I remember when I started doing this maybe 10, 15 years ago, it would be like when we talk about tech, there were screens everywhere and there was like tech I could show people in a store. And now there's no tech that you can see. But what's really happening now is a kind of, I think the best kind of tech that I'm seeing is where it's just adding to these kind of slow, creative experiences people are having in stores. And almost like being fast and efficient and convenient when customers went at the moment that they want that speed and efficiency. Again, actually, I'll reference Glossier because, you know, the whole kind of payment and order pickup process in there is so incredibly slick. you know, watching people again, that, you know, they do a lot of sales in that Soho store. And watching them, you know, the staff suddenly, like, they go around, but suddenly when someone wants an item, they whip out the iPad. And they built that POS system themselves. I was talking to them about it. So it's not a third party thing. They create it themselves, whip it out, and literally the customer asks for the item. Within a minute, it's punched in, we tap the card, they're around the corner, and then they do the whole kind of, you know, you put your bag on the name on the Glossier bag, and within 30 seconds, there's that kind of retail theater moment, and everyone's taking a photo or a video of themselves buying their Glossier thing. So it's kind of slow again. It's like it's incredibly fast getting the item, but then all of a sudden, people are taking videos of their bag and whatever. And I think they're so, that's, to me, clearly, that's just a great use of technology at the right moment. Yeah. Tech doesn't appear in that store until someone wants to buy something. So, yeah, love that.
Oh, that's great. And obviously, you kind of use this research as a guidepost to see what's happening in the industry, what trends will make an impact. And I'm sure you speak with a lot of brands and retailers as well around like what they're thinking about. So I'm curious, like, this is the show where we dig into the trends that are being prioritized, you know, how they're spending their money, how they're spending their time. Is there anything that's rising to the top for you right now, like in terms of how they're investing in stores, how they're thinking about stores? Like, are they really leaning into this creative aspect, or are their priorities kind of elsewhere right now?
It's a really good question. So, I mean, obviously there's quite a clear split in terms of retail categories, you know, for sure. Like, if I think about some of our European clients, a lot of premium fashion brands are having very different priorities to, you know, grocery brands or whatever. But I think at a high level, there's almost a weird polarization. I feel like everyone I speak to, it's kind of two things. It's like experience, any kind of tech and solutions that can improve that. And I mean by that often experience in stores, creating something memorable for customers, boosting loyalty, feeding their kind of retail community tech that can support that they're loving and they're interested in. But at the other end, it's all about efficiency.
Yep.
And how can we just squeeze a little bit more money out of every store, out of every customer, which reflects a lot of other consumer stats we're seeing. I think that it's like, I feel like everything is about both ends at the moment, the kind of high luxury end, getting people to spend on those big ticket items and focusing on big spending customers, but then also being incredibly efficient. So yeah, I think at NRF, and certainly in terms of clients I'm talking to, it's therefore technologies like, people are really, for all the talk about, I don't know, generative AI, reading retail networks, I'd say the stuff that I know that retail clients I know were spending money on, it's refining their POS, for example. It's like how...
The foundation.
Absolutely. Like, can we make it a little quicker? They're not really talking about self-checkout, but they are actually talking about like Uniqlo self-checkout, because now everyone wants that because it's kind of found this beautiful spot between like something that's familiar, like a supermarket checkout, but actually something that's even better because it's got their RFID. So loads of retailers I talk about are like, wow, we want to do a kind of Uniqlo thing. Decathlon have done it as well. But I think a lot of it is definitely POS and like a not, you know, they're less interested in kind of just walk out type stuff, but they are interested in some sort of slicker payment thing. Also what POS can do in terms of after purchase, returns remains a massive thing. Tech that can solve that. And they are interested in generative AI, but I mean, it's such a, the thing that I'm noticing is retailers just keep saying to me, we know it's massive, we are investing in it, but we really want to hear about solutions to problems that use it. They're still telling me that technology companies talk about AI first rather than the problem and the solution, which, you know, I think is, for me, is a big one. I'm seeing some of that at NRF, but I'm hopefully going to try and learn more about it, because I'm still hearing a lot of noise about AI, but I want to see more solutions
practical,
to problems.
Practical use cases, how it improves the workflows.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly.
Totally agree. Okay, some good practical examples of technology. What about anything that you think is going to be like absolute hype and like not really going to go anywhere, but people just love to talk about it?
I'm going to go for a really controversial one, because why not? I run a small company.
Yeah,
I could get this massively wrong and, you know, it comes back to both. It doesn't matter. I think aspects of retail media networks falls into the hype category. And I'll say why. It's mainly because I'm skeptical from, if I'm totally honest, from the retailer side. I read a thing the other day, and it's an obvious point, but it's reminded me. Supermarkets, I think the margin on average for a supermarket making money on a retail media network, like ad money for them within a physical supermarket, the margin is 80, 90%, right? And the average margin from regular grocery, just selling food for a supermarket, apparently is like 3 to 4%. Like, you know, basically running a supermarket is a nightmare business. Just like you make no money and you have to, it's all volume. It's all volume all the time because the margins are so small all the time. It's really, really difficult. So there's so much enthusiasm behind it, but I'm starting to realize I get it, because the supermarkets are massively excited, because it's like, oh my God, here is a way we can make proper big margin business. And the technology companies, of course, are chasing that. So it's not that I don't think it's going to be really significant, but I just almost feel like brands should be a tiny bit, and I mean by this product brands, the brands at the supermarkets and the technology companies are going to chase to spend money on these platforms. They should just always like take it all with a pinch of salt and just remember that this benefits supermarkets enormously. And I just think the product brands need to wait and say, you know, they really need to be shown what data, is the data really there in a meaningful way? Yes, we know that in retail media networks, they can show them some cool stuff and tell them the stuff they have been able to tell them for a long time maybe. But decision-making stuff, can digital space in a supermarket really tell them decision-making stuff? You know, I'm not saying that it won't happen eventually, and it won't happen at scale, but
We're still figuring it out.
Totally, and I think, so it's exciting, but I just think it's good to be skeptical of that one to some extent, because the product brands, I think, are going to be hammered with tech companies and supermarkets saying, do this now. And I think they should just go, do you know what? Like, we need a little time.
Right. Well, because they're going to be the ones that have to validate the investment, right?
Exactly.
Like,
absolutely.
The proof points. Yep. And if they can't do that, then it's going to be on them.
Yeah, and that's the only one. And I suppose it's unfair to call it hype, but just, especially NRF, there's so much talk about it. And I still think it's early. I still think it's really early. And there's more stuff that needs to happen.
Totally fair. Totally fair. And then, like, as we think about the evolution of the store, the experience, what customers are expecting, I'm curious, you know, just again, in your work and your conversations with brands and retailers, how do you connect all of this data and, you know, this on the street work that you do to actionable advice and guidance for your clients and your partners, right? Because I feel like sometimes there's this tug of war, right? Like, I see Glossier doing this really cool thing, and I'm like, I want to do that cool thing, right? The thing was Instagrammable moments, quote unquote. Like, everyone wanted an Instagrammable moment because of Glossier, because of Museum of Ice Cream and activations like that. How do you encourage that balance between, like, taking inspiration from these really cool things and grounding it in what is accurate and practical for that particular business and like where they sit in the world and where they should sit, I guess?
Absolutely. It's such a good question. I think primarily what we try to do, so the first thing is that when we go and see all these different physical things, we try to assess it in quite simple ways. So we go, you know, first and foremost, is this something we've seen before or not? Is it genuinely new? Mm-hmm. If it is new, you know, what is actually different about it? And we get to know the business a little bit and dig into it. But I think the good thing these days is it's very rare that one of these physical things doesn't have a key digital component, whether that's something happening digitally that's taken people to this store, made them go in the first place because maybe it's a digital first brand, or that the store in some ways isn't contributing in a kind of halo effect to online sales or customer acquisition online. So the good thing is, when we see something that we like in stores, what we then can do, and we always are able to do, is actually go, is this kind of having an effect on what's happening online? Glossier is a good example. So what we're able to do, and we started seeing them open stores, they opened their Covent Garden store in London, I think, in 2019. Mm. What we did is we looked at it, we loved the store, we thought it was amazing. We could see it was busy, queues every day. We could see already, and then they reported early on that it was selling a lot of stuff, so it was successful. But more importantly, we then could look at their socials and look at their digital footprint, and what we could see was that the store was kind of creating content. The store became like a content creator, right? And then that, if we looked at their Instagram channel, I mean, half of what Glossier were putting out was coming from the store. And then we were reminded, well, the content online is how they get new online customers into the business in the first place. Right. So that suddenly was this quite simple loop that they had. The store creates online content, and then that content brings people into the store to buy stuff, and on it goes over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So the good thing is I then felt like I had a live example for any other people that I might offer as good inspiration of, not just a really cool looking store that gets young people to it, but that has very real benefits.
Right.
In terms of not just store sales, but actually, you know, I would tell people this store creates content, you know, and there's a massive value on that for brands now. It sells as well, and people go to the store and have fun, so it does fulfills kind of regular great stuff that a store should do, but actually it's creating content online, which so many of the brands I talk to place quite a high value on. So I guess that's quite a good case study of how we would look at it in the kind of digital age. We're able to go, well, anything that happens in a store should have a kind of digital consequence. So we then go, right, is this having an impact?
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating, because you think about the ripple effects, right? And how one channel can fuel the other, not just like in terms of traffic and actual revenue outcomes, but just general influence, how it supports that community building. And, you know, I had the chance to sit in on this session with Glossier CEO yesterday, and the core of that business is community and content, and that's how they started with Into the Gloss. So it was interesting to see how that brand has evolved, but like the core of it still has very much remained intact, and it kind of stems to this bigger concept of content, community, and commerce really coming together.
Absolutely.
In these ecosystems and these experiences. And, you know, that's the theme for the Retail Innovation Conference in June. And you're helping us curate our store tours.
Yeah.
And I think you have such a deep understanding of where our heads are at with the theme, you know, what our objectives are. And, you know, I'm curious, like, what are you thinking about as you kind of scout out locations and you think through brands? Because last year you had some incredible examples, you know, that were direct retail, sometimes a bit retail adjacent. So what are you thinking about for this year?
Well, what's really exciting for this year is, you know, as we've been discussing, we've been able to almost split the tours into two strands, and that's where our thinking's already at. It's going to take us to a different location, which is fun as well.
Yep.
But at a very high level, we wanted to see, well, can we show people what some really big brands are doing to provide great customer experiences, but actually, in that kind of everyday, just an experience that fulfills maybe basic kind of convenience or just speed or a brilliant shopping experience, but even when someone isn't looking actually to go into Gents or Monster and be wowed, but they just want to pick up a load of stuff really quickly and have great customer service and get what they want when they want to get it and that kind of stuff. So one part of the tour will actually look at partly some mass market retail that we think is really pioneering. So a few big examples. But then what we're also able to do, or partly on that tour and with the other group as well, is really look at maybe some smaller retailers or maybe sometimes some bigger retailers who are kind of branching out and trialing some slightly different things, like a different arm of the business. But like Banana Republic with BR Home at the moment, which is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at some of that. So then there'll be the other part of the tour where we're looking at some really, really creative things. So a bit like last year, looking at kind of businesses like Rafa, you know, Cycle Club, or it might be Foxtrot and the amazing stuff they're doing with their convenience stores, but how they're kind of brands that, again, I think you're right, like they, from the beginning, they really get that link between content, community, and commerce. Also the blending of those things.
Yes.
You know, which I love. We'll do a lot of things on those tours where we look at brands where there isn't a clear delineation between when the customer is kind of part of a community and absorbing content or buying. You know, it's almost a customer that the buying is almost secondary. They kind of really identify with the brand and the community. So, yeah, I think our tours are really going to blend with the theme of the conference, but we're so happy that we're able to kind of do these two groups so we can really see some mass market retail as well as some, again, focusing on some smaller, newer players who are doing cool stuff, which hopefully gives people who come a chance to see some stuff they're not familiar with.
Yeah, and what I love about Chicago, and obviously born and raised in New Jersey, so I'm very much a New York City gal, but what I find really fun about Chicago is like it is such a rich community and there's like such a diverse cross-section of so many different brands and retailers. Like you can get as much going to, you know, and from a practical, like inspirational standpoint from a small business, you know, in a local neighborhood versus say the giant Under Armour flagship, you know, on the Magnificent Mile there. So we're really excited to work with you and kind of explore, you know, what those trends are and, you know, what opportunities exist for our attendees. And for those of you who don't know, that event is taking place June 4th through 6th. Store tours are on June 4th. So really excited to kind of blow that agenda out and really inspire people.
Yeah, I'm so excited to come back to Chicago and work with you again, Alicia.
Yeah, likewise, and excited to have you on the pod. Thanks so much for digging into some of these topics with me. Again, you see so many great examples. It's just fun to kind of touch base and hear what you're seeing.
Yeah, loved it. I really hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks. Yeah, you too. And to those of you listening, if you have any follow-up questions for us, ideas, stores that you saw, if you were in New York for the big show, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line on social media, largely LinkedIn, at Retail Touchpoints. We're also tapping in once in a while on Twitter or X at rtouchpoints. It's such an exciting time for store design, in-store storytelling, community building, so we'd love to hear what you see. But that's it for us for now. We will see you next week with another great conversation with someone who is reshaping and reimagining all things retail. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Retail Remix. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find us on your favorite podcast player. Until next time, keep mixing it up.